Miss an interview? Listen to it now at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. You work hard for your business, so should your bank. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC.
Sports Radio 1043 The Fan. Every Saturday morning, it's Terry Wickstrom Outdoors. Terry takes you inside the outdoors. You know, hunting, fishing, camping. It's Terry Wickstrom Outdoors. Now, here's Terry.
Good morning on this, I won't say cool Colorado day, that's for sure. We hit 101 at my house yesterday, but you know what? We were still outside. It's just beautiful. It's dry. Obviously, you got to make sure you stay hydrated and, you know, and stay in the shade and try to do activities more earlier and later in the day. But it's just, it's still summer and it's beautiful and everybody wants to get out. It's going to be in the 90s the next few days, but a little cooler. But there's a lot going on. We're going to cover a lot today. There's a number of fishing opportunities. We'll touch on some of those during the course of the day. There's also a big controversy in the fishing community in Colorado, and that's on this proposal to increase spearfishing, change the regulations and increase spearfishing in Colorado. Well, we're going to take that head on today. At 9:30, the Spearfishing Association representative is going to join us, and we're going to let them tell us why they think they should have more opportunities and more access in Colorado. Following that, the next segment after that will be Chad LaChance speaking from as sort of a voice of the conventional angler who's worried about the impact and why he feels we shouldn't increase the access. So that'll be from 9:30 to 10. We're also going to talk a lot of hunting today. Second hour, Nate's going to tell us where the big game are at, what's going on. On our Jack segment, we're going to talk about picking out a hunting rifle. If you're new to big game hunting, and there's several factors you're going to have to consider. Not only the right rifle, but does it handle ammunition that's readily available? Because some ammunition isn't. And then after that, Colorado Clay is going to talk about how to practice, how to get your scope sighted in, how to get ready for things like dove season. So we've got just a lot to cover. But right now, let's talk some fishing. Let's go right to the phones. And joining us, he's the editor of Trout Magazine. He's the an editor at large for Field and Stream. He's a good friend and an avid angler, and he's been up in Colorado's high country, so he's got some just really fresh reports for us. Kirk Dieter. Good morning, Kirk.
Good morning, Terry. How are you doing today?
You know what? I am doing great. It's beautiful out there. Where are you calling us from?
I'm up in Steamboat Springs right now.
Weather is beautiful up there as it is down here.
It is. It's been hot the last couple of days, but as you mentioned, I've been up in the high country kind of escaping the heat and doing some fishing up high.
You know, I want to get to where you've been fishing and how it is and steer people to some good opportunities. But before we even start, are you concerned at all about the lower elevation rivers that maybe we should be a little careful with them this time of year with this heat?
Yeah, you know, anytime the water temperatures in the rivers approach, you know, 65 or above, I stop trout fishing. And we could use a couple good monsoon rains to refresh things. But if you go up high, that helps us avoid that problem. And that's one of the reasons that I do advocate for fishing up in lakes this time of year, especially. Plus, it's fun. I mean, it's some of the best opportunities.
Oh, you know what? One of my favorite fly fishing opportunities is Rocky Mountain National Park. And I've been up horseback riding up in the high alpine lakes where there's some big fish. And I've been down and where you can almost drive up to the river and caught brook trout and cutthroats right alongside the path. But whatever you're doing up there, you're in the most incredible setting. It doesn't even matter the size of the fish. It's where you're at. So tell us a little bit about some of the places you've been to.
I've been up in the Zirkles, and I've been up, you know, kind of up in, off of Rabbit Ears Pass near Steamboat here. And there are so many lakes, you can't name them all, but everyone has different characteristics. Some are filled with brook trout. Some are filled with relatively shallow. Some are quite deep, potholes and so forth. Some are easy to get to. You can drive up to them. Of course, you see more people if you get to the lakes where there are easier access. And if you're willing to walk, The other on Wednesday, I walked almost 9 miles and found some amazing high country cutthroat trout, and that was it was really worth the effort. And plus, it's cool up here. You know, once you get above 9,000 feet, it's a lot cooler, and you just have to watch the weather. We've been lucky. While we need the rain, we've been lucky not to have the afternoon storms. But typically, if I'm going up high, I try to do that in the morning and then get off the mountain before 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Just a comment on that. Next week, we're going to have a meteorologist from our partners at Channel 9 join us, and we're going to talk about lightning and avoiding the danger of lightning in Colorado next week. So that's something people want to mark their calendars, because it really is something you have to be cognizant of when you're in a high country, isn't it?
Oh, no doubt. No, I'll be tuning in for that, too. I mean, you can never have enough refresher safety information on lightning. That's the one thing that kind of scares me. I have no control over it. You can have animal encounters. Saw a moose the other day on the trail. You can run into bears and so forth. You know how to handle things. It all works out well, but lightning you have no control over. So that's the one thing that has my attention all the time.
So let's say I want to head up to some of these high country lakes. Do you just go by word of mouth on some of these lakes, or are there some resources? And then what do you do when you get there? How do you decide how to approach them?
Well, there are a number of maps and books and hiking guides. I pick those up. And then I have a little Garmin inReach GPS that makes sure that I'm on the right path. And that helps me to guide into where I want to go. And some places, of course, I've been there before, so it's familiar. But if I'm exploring somewhere new, I try to read up on it. You can read up on it online. Or have the book that you can carry in your pack so to double-check yourself. And then a GPS is always a good idea. But then when you get there, it's really not that complicated as far as the fishing goes. These fish don't see a lot of people, and they're opportunistic. Their season for eating is a lot shorter than other places because it freezes up here so quickly in the fall. So right now it's damselflies, it's caddisflies, and mayflies. And I found that the best way to fish is maybe a dry dropper with a caddis that I can see and a soft tackle pheasant or a soft tackle harrier. And I like to make the cast and then slowly twitch that nymph fly. And 9 out of 10, they eat the nymph. So that's my story.
And I love the dry dropper thing. Down low right now, the hopper dropper thing is going crazy. And up high, you can get away with you're right, the fish aren't educated. They're hungry. They're looking up all the time. I don't know how many times in Rocky Mountain National Park I've thrown a great big Chernobyl ant in the tiniest little pool to have a cutthroat or a brook trout that you think wouldn't be interested in something that big come up and eat it. And another thing, you don't have to have heavy fly gear to fish these areas either, do you?
No. In fact, it's the lighter the better. I dial in on a few flies, and I carry them in my shirt pocket. I have nippers that I wear around my neck, some spool of tippet, and some hemostats to work with the fish and pull the hook out of their mouth and all that. And that's it. And I like to fish with a 9-foot three-weight or four-weight that I put in a tube and carry on my pack. And that's about it.
And you mentioned how good the fishing is on these high country lakes. How long were, most of them will probably now stay good till we get into September, you think?
I think so. I think it'll be really good in early September, assuming we get some rains and so forth and things freshen up. But September is the best month for me. As long as we know we've got good weather windows, you go up there, the colors are all turning and the fish are turned on and a lot of animals moving around. I think it's only going to get better, the high country. Plus, with all that's going on in the world right now, people are gravitating toward water, which is a great thing. But the easier access rivers and lakes down low and rivers that people drive up to are busy. They're crowded. And that's a good thing. I'm not complaining about that. But if you want to get away from the crowds a little bit and get off the beaten path, even just a mile hike will open up so many new doors for any angler in the state. And it's not just fly fishing, it's spin fishing, It depends on the regulations. If you check that wherever you go, you have all sorts of opportunities, and you can spend the whole day. It's just great. It's been great for me.
Now, I know you also spent some time on a few rivers. Anything worth bringing us up to date there?
I've been on the Upper Colorado, and it is busy there, but Upper Colorado is fishing well. I also just finished floating for the year, the stretch of the Yampa that I float. It's getting a little bit low to float now, but there's great walk-in fishing above Steamboat Springs, Chuck Lewis and that kind of area. And it's full-on hopper time. And those are my favorite dry fly eats, I'll be honest with you. And I had one fish the other day just kind of scrutinize this giant hopper, like a size 8 that we were throwing, and watch this fish track it down the bank and then 20 yards later decide to come up and eat the thing. And it turned out to be like an 18-inch rainbow trout. It was a pretty special moment, and I think it's going to be hopper time, from, like you said, into the fall and into September. So, and it's my favorite time of year to fish.
Well, I'll reiterate what I said earlier, too, and that's the fact that if you're maybe not the – I fly fish quite a bit, but I admit that it's not my main forte. I grew up as a bass and walleye guy, and I'm not the most proficient caster. And I can make a little less accurate or a little less delicate cast with a hopper because they kind of plop on the water anyway and then have a nice nymph below it, like a Copper John or something, but there's a pheasant tail. You don't have to have be real picky a lot of times. If you know what they're eating, it always helps, of course. But then I can see that hopper, which you said about the caddis. You know, as I get older, if I throw a 22 – size 22 mayfly, dry mayfly out on the water, I have a tough time seeing it. But when I throw that hopper out there, I can follow my drift a lot easier, and I know what's going on. And it's fun because the hoppers are jumping around you. You know it. You just get that feeling. And I've been on that Upper Colorado stretch where I'd be catching rainbows on the nymph below on the hopper dropper, and then all of a sudden one of those browns will just explode on that hopper. It really is a blast, isn't it?
It sure is. And I'll tell you what, the thing that's also nice about this time of year and the hopper flies is you don't have to make a perfect cast. It doesn't matter if it splashes. And oftentimes in the afternoons here, it's windy, right? And so when the wind is blowing, sometimes that bothers certain anglers, especially if they're trying to fish a mayfly hatch or whatever. But the wind is exactly what you want in hopper season because it's blowing the grasshoppers and ants and beetles and other things out of the grass next to the river and onto the water, and it's like opening the smorgasbord for the fish. So don't be afraid of the wind. Work on your wind cast a little bit, and it doesn't matter how pretty it is when it gets there. Get the fly within about 3 or 4 feet of the bank and let it ride and see what happens next.
Oh, and it's a great way to gain confidence fly fishing. The hopper dropper time of the year. You know, even small places like the North Fork of the Big Thompson and some of those where there's a good population of smaller fish, you can just really gain confidence with it. Any other spots you've heard of or been to? Anything you might want to direct people to if they're looking for a place over the next week?
Well, you know, again, it's one of those things where we're all being careful and so forth. So don't forget the local waters. Don't forget the bass pond that's nearby. Don't forget the carp fishing that's nearby. You don't have to, on the one hand, I spend a lot of time now talking about going way far afield and getting up into the mountains, and that's great for isolating, but also finding the water that's close to home is helpful too. So it's a game of near and far now. And I think that's the play.
I was just going to say, as far as the ponds, I had a grandson up. We went and checked out a few of the ponds. He's 5 years old. He was able to catch about 10 or 12 bluegills by himself, making his own cast with a push-button rod in one of the ponds. And I went back to that same pond here just a couple of days ago with just a plastic worm and a spinning rod, and I caught about half a dozen small bass. So there's lots of activity in lots of places. We're going to run out of time, but before I let you go, I got to tell you, a mutual friend said to say hi. Van Rollo said that he was talking about kind of the people that he used to with you and me and Charlie Meyer, and it really brought back some memories. He's a really good guy.
Yes, he is. He's been a good friend, and as someone who's been a reporter and a writer in this industry for a long time like yourself, Van has always been, he's not always been credited because he likes to be behind the scenes, but he's always been one of my best sources. And I appreciate that he'd reach out and say hi.
Yeah, he's just a super, super guy. Hey, any 20 seconds, got an interesting article coming up. What's coming out next issue of Trout Magazine?
We've got, you know, we kind of went back to the basics in Trout Magazine. We've got great GEARAC essays. We didn't do any, it was just going back to why we love fishing. We have essays from Tom Reed, Chris Camuto, Erica Hickey's got a nice essay in here. So it's an essay-driven issue of Trout Magazine, and it's I think what we need at this time, whereas there's so much going on, it's going to be a fun read.
All right. My friend, you enjoy the rest of your time up there in Steamboat, and we'll talk again soon, and I can't wait to get on the water with you.
I'll look forward to it. You take care of yourself. Thanks for everything.
All right. Kirk Dieter, Trout Magazine, Field & Stream, several other publications. Great resource, great guy. We'll take a quick time out. When we come back, Parks and Wildlife is going to join us, and we're going to talk about the new regulation in state wildlife areas right here on Terry Wickstrom Outdoors on 104.3 The Fan.
You work hard for your business. So should we. That's why First Bank offers commercial real estate loans, business lines of credit, and online cash management solutions. With tools and services designed to make your business run easier, your day could have less this and more this. Visit eFirstBank.com/business to learn more. First Bank, business banking for good. Member FDIC.
First Bank. Banking for good.